good story. There's a disclaimer. Please read it at your leisure. So the results. On the page three, for those who are on the telephone, I'm going to run through the highlights of our results. Now, our production comes from our Kounrad project in Kazakhstan, and many of you who've been following us over the years will know that we started production back in 2012, and year on year, we've increased production from that facility. So the last year, we produced over 14,000 tons of copper. The plant was originally spec'd to produce about 10,000 tons, but through various capital programs that we've completed now, we've upped the capacity to 14,000 tons, and the plant will now run for many years to come, certainly beyond 2030. So the financial results for this last year allows us to announce a proposed final dividend for last year of 10 pence per share. Now, this is up 25% year on year. And obviously, a lot of factors have come into play, not least the increased production. But our total dividend then for last year is 15.5p, and that compares to 12.5p in the year before. On the back of increased production, our gross revenue is up slightly on $69.3 million. Obviously, the gross revenue, although the production is up, the copper price for last year generally was lower than the previous year. But I think one of the most outstanding figures is the cash cost of production is 43 cents per pound, and that's down 28% on the previous year, 2015, when our cash cost was about 60 cents per pound. Now, many of you in the business and the analysts amongst you will know that in 2015, the average cash cost of production in the industry was probably closer to $1.60. We understand that the cash cost for 2016 actually has, across the industry itself, has come down quite markedly. Probably exchange rate differences and the cut in the oil price has fed through to the cash cost of production. But it's still running at about $1.35 to 40 cents average. So we at 43 cents, as you can see, are operating very much at the lowest quartile of the cash cost curve. So what does this mean? This gives us an EBITDA of just shy of $40 million, which represents an EBITDA margin of 56%, which again, comparing in the sector, is probably as good as you can reasonably expect. So having spent much of our cash or capital on our Stage 2 expansion project last year, we still ended the year with $40 million, just over $40 million in the bank. And the Stage 2 expansion program was materially complete last year. And just to remind those who are not aware, this Stage 2 expansion is to facilitate the leaching of the Western dumps. And the completion of that program, which is now, as we say, materially complete, allows us to start leaching this month, April of this year, and that will then ensure longevity of the project life, as I said earlier, to beyond 2030. So, in addition, last year, we added to our portfolio within Kazakhstan. We acquired an exploration license area, which Gavin will explain a bit more to you later on. We own 80% of this, and we're currently going through the permitting to get the license allocated to the new company. More news, good news on top of good news, one would argue, is that our Q1 results came out this morning, and they are 5% up on the first quarter of last year yet again. So 3,400 or just shy of 3,400 tons of copper we produced in the first 3 months of this year, which obviously you'll be aware augurs well for the production for this coming year. But I would remind you that we've always said our guidance is between 13 and 14,000 tons. And you know, one would say, yeah, well, could we not be more specific? I think 13 to 14,000 tons is where we guide. Last year, we guided 13 to 14,000, and I think we produced 14,020. So we made sure we beat our upper guidance number. And we are confident that we will be within our guidance range, and our costs will remain low, and we will be able to maintain, all things being equal in the copper price, a healthy dividend. I mean, as we closed last night, I think our dividend yield on a 15.5%, a 15.5p dividend was over 7%. So it's gratifying to see our share price this morning has risen, but on the back of a very strong production performance. With that, I'm going to hand on to Nigel, who will take you through the financial figures and the technical figures as well.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I've just skipped from this slide onto the financial review. I suppose the first thing really to touch on is the economic backdrop. Things that are a little bit outside management's control, obviously, but can materially influence our results. And if you look at the market conditions there, two major factors that affect our business, copper price and exchange rates. Copper price, first of all, ever since we IPO'd and started production back in 2012, you've seen there's been a decline in the copper price to, you know, last year what we saw was, is it a bottoming out of the copper market? Who knows, not for me to say. But if you look at the bottom of the graph here, this is more or less where 2016 is. And it was a fairly volatile year in many respects. The first quarter, very bearish sentiment in the market about copper prices down below $4,500 per ton. And yet in the final quarter of 2016, with the Trump election, there was the biggest rise in the copper price in 1 week there's ever been in the market. It went up 20% in 1 week and up to about $6,000 per ton. So, you know, is that the bottom of the market? We don't know. But certainly in the first quarter of this year, we've seen an average close to $5,700, $5,800 per ton. But what we experienced in our financial results last year was an approximately 11% year-on-year drop in the price of the copper price from the market that we could achieve. Our market consensus moving forward is about $5,500. Longer term, I think generally in the market, it's fair to say, there's a fairly upbeat overview, if you like, that prices will increase steadily, maybe not dramatically, maybe a bit of volatility on the way, but generally increasing. Against the copper price, the tenge devaluation. From when we started the operation back in 2012, we've seen a halving of the value of the local currency. 150, 2015, as you're all aware now, those of you who follow us, we had a serious devaluation of the currency, but that was positive for our cost base. It was about an 85% devaluation in 2015. And last year, what's reflected, and you'll see throughout all the financial numbers you see, the benefits we experienced in 2016 of that devaluation because of a lower cost base. Just to remind you, our cost base in Kazakhstan terms is about 60% tenge denominated, about 70% at the C1 level. And I guess the last factor really is we didn't see a major increase in inflation. Sub 10% type of inflation, hard to measure, but certainly the costs coming through the business were lower than 10% in terms of inflationary rises. So looking at the income statement, I think the main message is here really, continued strong profitability. Factors we look at, if you look at the revenue line first of all, our sales volume was up by about 16% year on year, and this reflected obviously the full year of our expanded production capability. The average sales price that we achieved was close to $5,000 per ton. Now that was down year on year, so the combination of higher volumes, lower sales prices achieved, led to a gross revenue increase of about 3%, about $2 million increase there you can see across the business. And that fed through to the main line that we focus on in the business is the EBITDA line, not profit before tax. I'll touch on that in a minute. But EBITDA line, which mainly cash items that we're talking about. And you can see there our EBITDA margin increased to 56% and our actual EBITDA increased to $39.1 million, which is a 12% increase. At the profit before tax line, there's a number of non-cash items which affected that between the various years. We had a reduction in depreciation, which I'll touch on later. And we had also the impact of 2015, we had a Forex gain of about $9 million, whereas last year we had a Forex loss of about $1.2 million, a switch of about $10 million, which leaves the profit before tax at a fairly flat level. Look at the gross profit line in the numbers, you'll see that's about $10 million higher between the 2 years. Looking at the unit costs, again, two key themes running through the unit cost of production. One, increased volumes, and two, the devaluation of the tenge. The fully inclusive level, which we like to measure ourselves because at the moment we've only got one producing asset, we dropped by about one third, $1.58 in 2015 down to $1.06. That's tremendous. Drops all the way across the patch, the main one being depreciation. As we moved to operating to the western part of the operation, we took the opportunity, in line with our auditors, PwC, to actually extend the lives of the assets out to the life of the licence, which is 2034. Has a marked impact on the unit cost, as you can see there, down by about 23 cents over the 2 years, 59% reduction. The other areas to talk about, I'll touch more on C1 cash cost in a minute on a separate slide, but the MET you'll see there, in unit terms, down by about 5 cents per pound. The actual amount we actually paid in MET was similar across the years, and the rate that we pay on the PLS value, if you like, is still 5.7% and has been for possibly 10 years now. So that's a good number, fully inclusive cost down to just above a dollar per pound. At the C1 cash cost level, again, reduction all the way across from 2015 right through to 2016. Most of that, I have to say, is due to the devaluation. Locally incurred costs, such as power, for example, you can see those down 44%. So a combination, actually, in that sense, of both lower consumption per tonne of copper that we produced, as well as the devaluation feeding through to now, give us a cost of power about 4 cents per kilowatt hour. And those of you who follow other mining companies around the world, we realise that is an extremely competitive price of electricity in the area. Payroll, more within our own control. So even despite a 25% increase that we paid in January 2016 to our staff, there's still a 31% reduction in unit costs on the payroll side. Similar in reagents and similar in materials. To give us a cost of production of producing the cathode copper of 28 cents per pound, down 30% from 40 cents in 2015. And then at C1 cash cost level, a couple of other factors we measure, obviously, DNS is distribution and supply costs, effectively our contract with Traxys, our off-taker. We negotiated a good deal with them through to the end of 2018, which has reduced the cost, as you can see there, from 12 cents per pound to 9 cents per pound. And then local G&A, more or less staying the same in absolute terms, the number of people employed to manage the business outside the operation, but in unit terms coming down 25%. CapEx. I think the message really here is that we're now fully invested in Kounrad. We've spent 5 years investing, initially the first plant that we built with the funds from the IPO, and then self-funded stage one expansion, which was to increase the capacity of the SXEW plant to 15,000 tonnes per annum, and then the stage two expansion, which was completed more or less last year, which is to increase the life through to the end of the licence period, beyond 2030. Total amount spent, $73.6 million. In that period of time. Capital discipline, obviously with Howard in charge of managing the capital budgets, we're always going to come in under budget, aren't we? But capital discipline across the patch, and we've managed to come in on the stage two expansion almost 30% below budget. Combination of devaluation, it's fair to say, but also some engineering efficiencies across the patch. And the final message, which will come through the cash flows in a minute, is that moving forward at Kounrad, we only expect something of the magnitude of $2 million per annum sustaining capex, be it changing anodes, cathodes, be it putting more irrigation pipes on the dumps, collector trenches, etc. And so the spare cash generated, if you look back 5 or 6 years on capex, we probably spent north of $10 million every year if you average it out. That money is now going to be spare for business development opportunities or returning back to shareholders. Similar message really. There's the cash flow. What you can see here is that our 2016 cash flow probably represents our performance better than the P&L. $45 million almost of cash flow generated. And if you look at it since IPO, $176 million. And there's three key areas where we pay our money back. First one is being a good citizen in the country. We pay our taxes on time. We comply with the law. So we pay our taxes. Second one is really being favourable, if you like, to our shareholders, paying money back to the shareholders. And the final one is investing in future growth. So investing in the project such that it delivers returns for the future. Balance sheet, not a lot to say. Strong balance sheet. We have $40 million worth of cash at the year end on the books and no debt. And we're fully invested in the project, as I say. Working capital requirements within the business are pretty low, actually. And one success we did have, which I've already mentioned before, is getting some VAT back off the government. We recovered $3.5 million of VAT during 2016 in two tranches, which we believe is a success, and we will continue to press the government for the amount that we still owe, which is about $2.8 million. That leaves us well placed for further growth opportunities in the future. In terms of shareholders, our favourite slide, I guess, almost $96 million once we've paid the final dividend. And just to remind you what that is 10 pence final year dividend for 2016. That will take us to about $96 million returned to shareholders since IPO. And that will represent a cumulative over the period that we've been operating, 31% of the gross revenues. So I think that's the end of, if you like, the summary of where we are financially and what the results give us financially. But obviously those financial results we could not have delivered without strong operational performance. Still continues to be managed by Howard Nicholson in an exemplary manner and his skilled team on site. And if you look at the highlights from the production update, in terms of cathode copper, Nick's already mentioned it, we've produced a record output of 14,020 tonnes. That's up by 16% year on year. And in sales terms, it's also up by 16%, coincidentally. And we sold just under 14,000 tonnes. So achieving our market guidance of 13,000 to 14,000 tonnes, right at the upper end. Total copper we produced, as you can see on the chart here, we're now close to 55,000 tonnes from the production. I think the other thing to really note about this is you can see, as we've often emphasised, the seasonality of the business. And I think together with the expansion programme and the incremental improvements period to period, we've managed to improve the performance. And as Nick mentioned before, Q1 2017 was actually a record first quarter. And as Pete Mullin-Jones in his note this morning said, a couple of plumbing tweaks, what we call intermediate leaching system, effectively regenerating, if you like, or improving the PLS grade coming through the plant by putting PLS impregnated solution back onto the dump and running it through the solvent extraction tanks. That's an improvement that we made. It was a trial system. It's not something else we plan to run for the rest of the year, but we may run it in future years in the West. Finally, on the outlook, as I say, good Q1 to start off with, and we're looking at our guidance for 13,000 to 14,000 tonnes this year, and we're well on track for that. Just coming on to a production overview, what this slide shows is that we're pretty stable in terms of the 5 years of operation we've had. And the focus on site is very much three things. There's safety, there's quality, and there's meeting our performance targets. The first one, which is safety, which is highlighted here by our LTIs, we had no incidents on site last year, and we've got an LTIFR running forward about 1.1. In terms of quality, cathode purity, as you can see down at the bottom there, always above 99.997998% quality of cathode. And then finally, in terms of meeting our production targets, which is what we always aim to do, you have to have a number of things. The first one is plant availability. And you can see throughout the period that steady, consistent performance in terms of availability of the plant. Last year it was 98.6%, and previous year it was 99.1%. Clearly as we move forward, we'll have maintenance programs, replacements of anodes, cathodes, etc. within the plant. I mean, you never get 100%, but it's a good high number in the 90s. And then comes the more complicated aspect to the operation. That's the SXEW plant. In terms of the leaching operations, the number of levers that Howard and his team have to pull on site to actually get that output is a combination of changing grades and changing flows. You'll see over the 5 year period, what we've experienced is that as the grade has declined and actually stabilised, we've seen an increase in flows. This slide here goes to show that point again, but from a different angle in many ways. As we've gone through the ore body, or the mineralised material, should I say, in the eastern area, the grade within that material has dropped from about 0.167% down to about 0.082%. That's almost a halving of the grade in the actual mineralised material. We don't expect it to drop much beyond that as we move over to the west as well, but as that's dropped, what we've had to do is increase the amount of area under leach. And therefore, with the increased area under leach and the increased material that they're leaching, we thereby keep the production. Eastern dump resources, just walk around where we are, eastern to western areas. On the eastern dumps, we've virtually exhausted most of the copper we planned to recover in dumps 9 to 10, dump 7 and dump 6. As you can see on the chart there, there's not a lot of recoverable copper left within those dumps in terms of what we plan to recover. And dump 5, which is where we're now focusing the operation, still quite a lot of copper left. And this one here, which is dump 2, giving about 25,000 tonnes of copper still to recover, about 2 to 3 years of operation effectively. And we'll be focusing this year on the eastern dumps for about 60% of the production. But this is the future, leaching from the western dumps. And as we move over this year and we transition into the western dumps, we'll be looking to recover about 40% of that production guidance from the west. And it does have different leaching characteristics, it's fair to say. But because of the experience Howard and his team have got, we'll be able to play with those levers to ensure that we get the production that we require. The total area that you can see here, and this is the western dumps here, is about 741 hectares. In the east, it's about 290, so it's about 2.5 times the area. And in terms of material, because they are slightly higher dumps, it's about 2.8 times. The average dump height in the east is about 40 metres, compared to 25 metres. Sorry, in the west is about 40 metres, should I say, and in the east about 25 metres, something like that. And the other key difference is the average leaching time. Now, this is the time to recover all the copper you expect to recover within that one cell, which in the east was 8 to 9 months. In the west, it's at the magnitude of about 20 months. So it will take longer for all the copper to come out of the cell. It won't take that long for it to initially come out. You'll get it after 2-3 weeks maybe. But in terms of recovering all the copper within that cell, it will take a longer time. And that'll be planned and managed in order to get the 13 to 14,000 tonnes. Copper recovery levels, we're looking at 35 to 42%, and I'll come on to the area that we're starting on in a minute, and we're looking at about 42% in that area. Overall, on average, 39%. And this expansion into the west will give us sufficient resource to manage through to 2030 and beyond. Just looking at the initial leaching area, as we call it, ILA, it's an area which is, you know, fairly large. It's about 109 hectares, 96 million tonnes of material, as you can see here, and we'll commence leaching then this week, later next week, with the intention that copper will be being produced in Q2 2017 from the western area. The recovered copper, don't get confused with this, that's the area that we're going to actually cover, if you like, with irrigation pipes. So we've probably got about 3 years worth of operation on this area alone. You can see as the chart demonstrates there, the fresh leaching pads are the dark blue pads. The purpley ones are winter pads for 2017 through to 2018. And then from 2018 onwards, we'll be doing the ones at the back of the area, effectively. Just one point on costs, just to bear in mind. Obviously, we've got inflationary costs across the whole business, but we do expect a slight increase in our C1 cash costs based on additional personnel of a magnitude of about 25 people out there, and also power costs as well, to pump the solution. And one thing we have put in place, I mentioned on Q1 about the ILS system, we do have in place over there the infrastructure for an ILS system in future years. Last but certainly no means least, CSR responsibilities, touched on health and safety already, very good record on it, good year last year. Now we have almost 1.5 million man hours worked since the last incident. In terms of environmental, focus last year was very much on looking at the western dumps, drilling monitoring boreholes, similar to what we have in the east effectively, and geophysics to look at the hydrogeology. And then, last but no means least, locally in the area, social. Spent quite a lot of money on social costs, 1.2 million since we started, and that's local costs in terms of helping schools out, etc., etc. And all our workforce generally are recruited locally. 99% of the workforce, we only have one expat director, as we mentioned several times in the past. And on that note, I think that concludes what is a solid set of financial results and operating results. And I'll hand over to Gavin. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Nigel. Mm-hmm. Moving on to the business development side of the, as Nigel said, the Western Dumps is the future of the company. It's really the sort of future platform of the company as we look at it now. So we've often sort of touted how many opportunities we've looked at, and we thought we'd just break this down into 2016 to give you a sort of finer grain view of how we approach things. And if you have a look at the chart, it demonstrates that we looked at well over 30 opportunities within the year. And we have quite a high sort of bar to get over internally, clearly in terms of, you know, cost dilution and accretion that we focus on. But we did sign 13 NDAs in the period as well. The geographic focus was, as we've continually stated, has been Latin America and the Americas, and of course Kazakhstan and a bit of Central Asia and Europe. We are dealing with Mother Nature, so, you know, if a good project crosses the desk in some other jurisdiction, that makes sense from a time zone and management perspective. We'll also look at it, and hence we've got a couple of things that did crop up on the African continent where, you know, where we had a little closer look at that. Deal size, we are skewed well towards putting bolt-on acquisitions into the business in that sort of 10 to 20,000 ton a year production range. But just to illustrate here, we have looked at a couple of transformative transactions in a much higher range, and we spent a lot of time last year with no results ultimately. But we are looking at you know, at both ends of the spectrum really is what we're focusing on. And clearly, copper still remains the key focus. A couple of opportunities did crop up that in the other base metals, but we don't want to go too far outside the tram lines and stick to what we know. So copper will remain a focus going ahead. And you know, again, the key thing here is that we need to look at projects that are going to be profitable and allow us to continue with this program of capital returns, which Nick and Nigel have talked to you through. And that ultimately gets down to shareholder accretion. As Nick mentioned at the outset, we did do one small deal back in 2016, which was purchasing 80% of the SHUAC license, which is in northern Kazakhstan. Very simple deal. We need to spend $2 million over the next 5 years to retain that 80%. And exploration work is effectively going to start in April. We expect the license to be transferred by the end of the month. We're out there tendering for drilling contracts, and you know, we intend to drill around 5,000 meters of diamond drilling and about another 17,000 meters of pure exploration, what we call CHT drilling, in the area. The aim of that drilling is really to focus initially around the Soviet-era resource, which was produced on the asset, which suggested there was about 330,000 tons of copper contained. We need to verify this, but certainly it's a what we geologists call a stand-up drill target, and it's you know, something we're focusing on initially. And as you can see, that is really the area of the small open pit, and that stockpile in the bottom bottom photograph, you know, is what initially got us interested in the project, because we were offered to purchase some of that material, which we put through some leaching tests, and it leaches well. So the idea here is to go after saprolite-hosted oxide material in the first instance, but we will be drilling a couple of deeper holes to look at the underlying porphyry system, which we think exists down there. On to Copper Bay. We announced at the beginning of this year the results of the DFS, which is completed on time and on budget. The NPV of $34 million demonstrates that the project has some value, and certainly the operating costs at $1.40 a pound are solid. Having said that, we've put the project on hold for the time being because we did run the models at $3 a pound copper, which is basically the consensus long-term average, but as a business, we don't have the confidence yet in that copper price outlook to go ahead and press the button on what is pretty substantial capex number. If you include the contingency, we're up into the sort of mid-90 million. So with the remaining budget on Copper Bay, we're basically focusing on looking at extending the life of the project. You'll notice in that table that the project life is 7 years, and moving out to the west into the surf zone where we know there's additional material may enhance that life of the project and consequently the economics as well. But we look at Copper Bay in the context of everything else in the pipeline and also in the business development pipeline, and our focus remains on getting the best return for every dollar we spend, and every internal project will be evaluated on the merits on its merits in relation to everything else we're looking at. So to the outlook, I think Nick and Nigel, I'm going to repeat a lot of what they said, but you know, we remain a profitable business. We've retained a strong balance sheet with $40 million of cash and no debt, and we've more than fulfilled our dividend policy, which is a minimum of 20%, and we've actually gone up to 31% of revenue this year. So you know, we believe that that strong capital return program will continue. Production guidance remains at 13 to 14,000 tons for 2017, and Q1 results so far demonstrate that we're on track to achieve that. We fully invested at Kounrad. Expansionary capex is over, and we're just looking at sustaining capex of $2 million a year, and we look forward to getting some results out of the SHUAC project as the year commences, which we'll be reporting to the market as and when. We still, in terms of business development, we've got a fantastic opportunity here. We've got a strong balance sheet, cash-generating asset, and we're well-placed, therefore, to search for additional growth opportunities. So that concludes our discussion today, or our presentation today, so we'd like to just hand over to the floor for any questions you might have. So if those on the telephone wouldn't mind waiting for a few minutes as we take questions from the floor. Martin Potts?
Yeah, just a quick one on your dividend policy. As you point out, you're paying out 31% of gross rather than 20% in the dividend policy. Are there any thoughts of moving that policy to cover some of that gap, given that you're at the end of your cap?
No, we don't have any particular, or we haven't had any discussions on that. I think leaving it at 20% currently gives a floor. Obviously, we will look this year. If the copper price, we see some sustainability to the copper price into the above $5,500 towards $6,000 a ton with no capital program, and we'll obviously see what the cash generated at the end of the year is. If we do an opportunity to acquire something that may take some cash, obviously that might diminish the cash available to us. But I think we're comfortable at 20% as a minimum. And equally, we've shown that if we haven't got a better opportunity to spend our cash on, then 30% is certainly up there and where we'd expect to be. And so we don't want to be held hostage to fortune see a low copper price test the market. But I still think 20% is pretty racy. 30% is even racier, but it's sustainable, as we've shown. Thanks. Richard?
I'm in danger of jumping the gun slightly, but if everything goes really well at SHUAC, when do you think we might see first commercial production? Very broadly.
You're right, you are jumping the gun. but it's a reasonable question.
Richard, we've got as I said, we've got a lot of drill targets there, which are based on some of the old Soviet era data. We haven't been able to get hold of the core clearly doesn't exist anymore, so there's a lot of verification to be done, and we're treating this really as a greenfields opportunity with obvious drill targets. Even with the following wind, if we drilled out a lot of resource this year and then continue with the drill program next year, you're probably looking at then another 18 months of feasibility study work, so 4 or 5 years. Answer your question.
Two questions for me. First of all, coming off of slide 20, the ILA for the Western Dubs, you indicate there's 109 hectares there represented, and I was wondering how many hectares will be put under leach this year.
Under leach this year?
Yeah.
We've grown a bit. If you look on slide. Slide 17 it is actually, apologies, slide 17, leach and operating scale. We've actually grown the business, as it says, the average area under leach from 2012 has grown from 15 hectares up to about 36 hectares, and that's kind of the average that we've got. We don't expect to go much beyond that. So the 109 that we've actually got, if you like, penciled in is what we call the initial leaching area. That's about 3 years operation. So, 35, 36 at any one time is the kind of area you might have on average under leach at any one time.
And you'll keep it at roughly
And we'll keep it roughly that, yeah. Those charts that you see on slide 17, don't want anybody to go away with the view that it'll just keep rising exponentially. Well, you get to a steady state whereby the amount of solution you can manage and the amount of area you can manage from the leaching operation is kind of optimum. A bit like the application rates of the leach solution onto the dumps, but you get an optimum feel for it after some experience of operation. So 36 hectares is about the maximum that we would go to.
My second question concerns, I was wondering if there's any color you can put on the current Q1
On the costs, we don't as such give cost guidance, to be honest with you. Obviously, 43 cents is the number historically for 2016. We aren't seeing, as I say, inflation coming through, so a massive increase in those costs. But the best I can give you, really, Paul, is that we do expect, once we switch on the Western dumps over the course of the year, an increase because of extra personnel and electricity costs, and then just a general rise in line with inflation and cost of power, etc., through the basic operation of the SXEW plant. So that kind of magnitude will feed through over the course of this year. But because we've had good volumes in the first quarter, I have to say our unit costs have actually been favourable, the ones that we've had reported internally.
And the outlook on the Tengie?
Now, that's a very good question. I've got probably people in the audience who can answer that better than I can. But from all the conversations I've had locally with, you know, either people on the board or people, PwC and American British Chamber of Commerce, there's not a view out there that it will strengthen, say, below the 300 level mark. It has slightly strengthened. Last year we saw an average of 342. Earlier this year we saw it go down to about 315, 310, something like that. But it's since slipped back to about 320. And the only point I'd raise is that it is quite strongly linked, so I'm led to believe, to the Russian economy, but also primarily the oil and gas prices. If that was to increase significantly over the course of the year, I would expect maybe you would see an increase in the tanker.
Thanks, Tom. Any more questions from the room? No, thank you very much. So I'll turn to the phone callers. Can we ask, are there any questions from the telephone?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. We currently have no questions on the phone lines.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. If there are no further questions from the room or the phone call, I'll call this to the end, and thank you very much indeed for coming along. Thank you.